Working?
This is working. I can give you a copy.
Yeah, okay.
At least something's working.
Yeah, I charged it before, but I guess it's not enough.
Shock.
से पार्वती जय तुझे सर्वशीष पर भक्ति विनंत सर पापा महाराज की जय. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Guru and Guru. So you all have these sheets. These are the prayers of Queen Kunti in Sanskrit. And maybe tomorrow we'll have it up on the other part too. So in case there's not enough, you can share the copies. I think there's some more copies over there. Yeah. Right there. There's more copies. So I'm going to sing. We will sing verses 18 to 22 together. I'm going to have a melody, which is Srila Prabhupada's melody from his tape. There's a tape of Srila Prabhupada singing these verses. So it might be a little hard to follow in the beginning. So maybe I'll sing the one verse all the way through, and then I'll sing it line by line, and you can repeat after me. So I'll just sing verse 18 now, all the way through. Kuntiyavacha namashe purusham twadyam ishwaram prakite param alaksham sarabhutanam antarbahiravastitam. Now I'll sing line by line. Namashe purusham twadyam. Namashe purusham twadyam. Ishwaram prakite param. Ishwaram prakite param. Alaksham sarabhutanam. Alaksham sarabhutanam. Antarbahiravastitam. Antarbahiravastitam. Maya javanika chanam. Okay, I'll sing it first all the way through. Maya javanika chanam. Agyadhok sajamavyayam. Nalakshase muradisha. Atanatya taroyata. Maya javanika chanam. Maya javanika chanam. Agyadhok sajamavyayam. Gyarok sajamai nalakshase muradisha nalakshase muradisha nato natya taroyata nato natya taroyata. So I'll sing it. Nata paramahansanam muninam amalatmanam bhakti yoga vidhanartam katam bhaje mahistriya. Tata paramahansanam, tata paramahansanam, muninam amalatmanam,
muninam amalatmanam,
bhakti yoga vidhanartam,
bhakti yoga vidhanartam,
katam pashe mahistriya,
katam pashe mahistriya.
Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nananaya cha Nandagopakumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Krishnaya Vasudevaya
Krishnaya Vasudevaya
Devaki Nananaya cha
Devaki Nananaya cha
Nandagopakumaraya
Nandagopakumaraya
Govindaya Namo Namaha.
Govindaya Namo Namaha.
Nama Pankachanabhaya Nama Pankachamalini Nama Pankachanetraya Namaste Pankajankraye. Nama Pankachanabhaya Nama Pankachamalini
Nama
Pankachanetraya
Nama Pankachanetraya
Nama Namaste Pankajangaye.
Namaste Pankajangaye.
Mukam karoti vachalam pangam langhayate girim yat kripam tamham vande shi gurum tinatarinam Om agyana timirandasya gyananjana shalakaya chakshirmilitam yena tasamai shi gurave namaham. So before we start discussing about Queen Kunti, I would just like to talk about the method of Bhagavatam study. And we have here on the board three steps or three words. These words come from a Bhagavatam verse, 12th canto, 13th chapter, verse 18. When we asked His Holiness Mahavishnu Swami how to study Srimad Bhagavatam, he gave us this verse. So this verse, in the last line of this verse, we have these three words, and these are the keys for studying Bhagavatam. I'll read the whole verse for you, and then I'll give the translation, and then we'll discuss the last line of this verse.
Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Amalam Yadvaishnavanam Priyam Yasmin paramahansyamekamamalam gyanam param kiyate tatta gyana virakka bhakti sahitam naishkamyam avishkritam tachin vansu patan vicharana para bhaktya vimuchyan nara.
Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless prana. It is most dear to the Vaishnavas because it describes the pure and supreme knowledge of the Paramahansas. This Bhagavatam reveals the means for becoming free from all material work, together with the processes of transcendental knowledge, renunciation, and devotion. Now here's the last line. Anyone who seriously tries to understand Srimad Bhagavatam, who properly hears and chants it with devotion, becomes completely liberated. So in the last line, there are three words, shinvan, supatan, vicharana, paro. So shinvan means hearing and chanting. So we just did hearing and chanting. That's the first thing you do. You hear and chant the verses. And that's part of the Bhagavatam study because the sound itself is purifying. Srila Prabhupada has said, if you just chant one verse daily, you'll get purified 100 yards. So you'll get a lot of purification just by chanting one verse of Bhagavatam daily. One mantra, he calls it a mantra, actually. He calls each verse is a mantra. Each verse has the power to deliver us, just like the Hare Krishna mantra. So about hearing, Srila Prabhupada has said that our movement is meant for training spiritual leaders. But without hearing and chanting, it is impossible to become a leader. Of course, in the material world, it's possible, but not in the spiritual world. So the leaders in the spiritual world are all chanting Hare Krishna. The leaders are Radharani, the gopis, the Brijbasis. They're all chanting. So we are following in their footsteps. And Srimad Bhagavatam is the explanation of the Hare Krishna mantra. And Hare Krishna mantra is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. So now that's the first part. There is a purport in Bhagavatam which explains that one must realize the text with proper attention. So simple hearing is not enough. We must hear with rapt attention from the real person. Then we can realize the presence of Lord Krishna in every page. So then the second part is supatan, which means chanting, or it can also mean study, intense study. So there's many ways to study Srimad Bhagavatam. Each and every word is full of so much meaning. And we're going to discuss from different angles of vision. The angle I'm going to take on this Prayers of Queen Kunti basically is the purports of Srila Prabhupada and his lectures, which were given. He lectured extensively on these verses in Mayapur and Los Angeles. So I've taken things from those lectures. I have a little bit from
the commentary of Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur as well. So we'll be hearing about these different things. Now the third part is our homework, and it's Vicharana Paro. We will be doing this also in class, thinking of the verse, meditating on it, but especially considering carefully how to apply it to our lives. So every day I will give you a little homework assignment that you take, you meditate on one verse, and try to apply it to your life. So today, the first two verses, 18 and 19, will give us material for our homework today. Now, Queen Kunti. We're going to study her life, and we're going to study, actually, in five different sections of her prayers. In the first section today, verses 18 to 22, we're going to see how Kunti was seeing Krishna, how she was seeing his form, how she was seeing his names, how she was seeing him within, without, everywhere, and right before her. In so many ways, she was seeing Krishna. So our theme today is seeing Krishna, and our homework will be based on seeing Krishna in our lives today. So we will try to see Krishna in our lives, and in perhaps a different way than we usually see Krishna. Then tomorrow we will study verses 23 to 27, which is describing the protection of Krishna for his devotees, and specifically protection of Kunti and her family, the Pandavas. Then on the third day, the classes will be about mercy. It'll be about the mercy that Kunti got, the mercy Yashoda got, and the mercy that we can get also, how to get the mercy. Then the fourth day will be about how to please Krishna by hearing and chanting and remembering, and also how Krishna appears, how he has appeared, why he has appeared, and how he can also appear in our lives by hearing and chanting. And then the last day, we will hear the highest unalloyed devotion, how Kunti prays for unalloyed devotion for Krishna. So Kunti's life was a great example of a devotee of Lord Krishna, a pure devotee. She showed how to live a life of dedication even while remaining in her position as a princess, as a daughter of the king, as a wife, queen of the emperor of the world, and also as a mother of great devotees. How she lived her life as a child. She was chosen by her father to serve the great sage Durvasa Muni. And we know about Durvasa, he has a great temper, very difficult to please. But as a small child, she pleased him. And because of that, he gave her the special mantra by which she could call any of the demigods. Then when she got married to Pandu, she accompanied her husband in the forest, and then she gave him children from demigods, Yamaraj, from Vayu, and from Indra. And as a mother, she sacrificed everything for her children. She was the original single mother, that she was living alone with five children, bringing them up by herself, and it was very difficult for her because the Kurus were trying to kill her children. So imagine her trying to protect her children. But she understood that her only protection was Krishna. In all of her conditions, she showed her dependence on Lord Krishna. So her prayers show not only her great devotion, but her deep knowledge and understanding of Krishna. Could somebody bring a glass of water? Warm. So her family was quite amazing. Yudhisthira was the personification of religion, Dharmaraj, born of Dharmaraj. Bhima was the strongest man in the world. And Arjuna was the greatest archer in the world. All Mahatmas, Srila Prabhupada said in one purport, that they were all Mahatmas, a family of Mahatmas. And Quit Kunti was the chief of the Mahatmas. She was the mother of all the Mahatmas. So she was Maharani. Srila Prabhupada said in one purport, the lessons of Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam are inevitably connected with the history of the Pandava Mahatmas. So how is Gita connected to the history? I'll just ask you a question. How is Gita connected to the Pandavas, the history of the Pandavas? Yes? Right. Time of war, yes. So that's one good point. There's another point also that's easy to forget, and that's the Gita was spoken to Arjuna, who was a Pandava, who was one of the Pandavas. Then Bhagavatam, how is Bhagavatam connected to the history of the Pandavas or their family? Yes? Vyasadeva's grandfather, okay, yes?
Because the Maharaj Parikshit is inquiring, and he's the descendant.
Right. The great grandson of Kunti was the hearer of Bhagavatam, and her son was the hearer of Bhagavad Gita. So what a family. Amazing family she had. She was a mother. Now, Kunti was feeling separation from Krishna. And that is the basis of these prayers. Krishna was right in front of her, but she was feeling separation because he was about to leave. So that is the purpose of all these prayers that she's saying, is to get Krishna to stay with her. She's trying to convince him. And now Kunti, Prabhupada also described his incarnation of the success potency of the Lord. Now, what is the definition of success? What, when we think of success, what do you think of? What's that?
Achievement.
Okay. Yeah, that is actually one of the words in the dictionary definition. Achievement. Okay. What else is it like a word when you think of success? What is a word?
Opulence.
Opulence. Okay. Yes. Wealth. Opulence.
Happiness.
Success. So in the dictionary it says victory, triumph, accomplishment, achievement. And of course, in the material world, success means money, fame, knowledge, opulence, beauty, cars, electronics, perhaps. All these things now. Cell phone is not even a, this is a necessity. It's not even success. It's just, even in India, even the workers have cell phones now, the rickshawwalas. Everybody has a cell phone. So that is common. Bank balance. So this is success. Now, she's an incarnation of success potency. Why should she be put through so much trouble? Bhishma Dev on his deathbed was crying to think how much trouble Kunti and her sons went through. That why did they have to go through all these sufferings? Going to the forest, losing the kingdom. All the sons were trying to be killed all the time. Even Kunti. They tried to kill Kunti when they went into the house of lack. And they, even Kunti was attempted to be killed. But to speak of her sons. So Srila Prabhupada explains in a purport in the 9th chapter of this first canto that the Lord teaches the world by teaching the devotees, just like a popular saying, the housewife teaches the daughter-in-law by teaching the daughter. So she wants the daughter-in-law to do something, she tells the daughter to do it, and then the daughter-in-law watches what the daughter does, and then she learns, and then she also is able to do the same thing. So in the world, the devotee is like the child of Krishna. So through the devotee, Krishna teaches the world. So through the life of Kunti, we learn many lessons. How to take sufferings, how to go through life in a Krishna-conscious way. So Prabhupada explained, a devotee's duty is to ungrudgingly accept tribulations from the Lord as a benediction. So this was shown in the life of Kunti. So today's prayers are going to begin with glorification of Krishna, how Krishna is everywhere yet invisible. Then the next verse, why we cannot see Krishna. Then she's her humility, that yes, I cannot understand you, I'm only a woman. And then she glorifies his names and his form. And then in the next section, she expresses gratitude to Krishna for protection, how in times of distress, Krishna would quickly come. In the third section, we hear about Krishna's bewildering behavior, which bewilders ordinary men but endears him to his devotees. And the mercy, how to accept the mercy, and what is the mercy, and why some people are reluctant to accept the mercy of Krishna, even devotees sometimes. And then the fourth section will be about how Krishna appears in the world in response to his devotees' request and distress, and how we can cause Krishna to appear even now by our chanting and hearing. And the last section, Kunti expresses her deep desire to love Krishna. So the purpose of our study of Queen Kunti's prayers will be to close the gap between theory and practice. Often we read the words, but they're only words to us. So we want to also apply them to our lives. And then it will stay with us if we actually apply it every day. So now I'm looking for this. I will start the first verse, verse 18. Kunti vacha. No, you don't have to repeat. I'll just say it. Namashe purusham tvadyam isharam bhagite param lakshyam sarvabhutanam antar bahiravastitam. Srimati Kunti said, O Krishna, I offer my obeisances to you because you are the original personality and are unaffected by the qualities of the material world. You are existing both within and without everything, yet you are invisible to all. So Kunti is seeing Krishna in three ways. All-pervading, without. She's seeing him without. Of course, she's also seeing without as Krishna, Supreme Personality of Godhead. She's seeing without in two ways, actually. As Bhagavan, and also as Brahman. And the third way is as Paramatma, within. She also saw how Krishna went inside of Uttara and protected Parikshit when Parikshit was in the womb. So this verse describes all three, Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. Her first thing, she says, Namashe Purusham Tvadyam, that I offer obeisances to you, the original personality. Now, Lord Brahma, he says the same thing, Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Same thing as Kunti is saying. But Kunti is in a better position than Lord Brahma because she not only realized Krishna and all his different aspects, she could see him standing before her. Brahma couldn't do that. Only once he got the darshan. But Kunti, Krishna was always coming to her house. Krishna was coming there just like a family member, just like a member of the family. He was eating with them. He was talking with them. He was their messenger. He was their guru. So many things to them. But Kunti was a little bit bewildered, as Prabhupada said here, you know, how can he be in the womb of Uttama? How can he be standing here in front of me, and how can he be everywhere? This is a puzzle. I mean, if you think about it, how can one person be doing all these things at once? Of course, he's God, so that explains it. But it's very difficult for us to understand. In the purport, in the middle, it is said, Queen Kunti affirms the Lord, although both within and without all living beings, is still invisible. So the amazing thing is that not only is he within, not only is he without, not only was he standing before, but he's invisible to us. He's everywhere, but we can't see him. And that's quite difficult to understand. So Queen Kunti experienced personally Lord Krishna was present before her, yet he entered within the womb of Uttara to save her embryo. Kunti herself was puzzled whether Sri Krishna is all pervasive or localized. So which is he? People are puzzled today. They think if he's everywhere, then he can't be a person. And this is what the persons who say, there is light. So the light is God, he's everywhere. So therefore, how can he be a person? So this they cannot understand. Is he localized or is he all-pervading? So one of our devotees, Jadarani, in the beginning, when she first went to see Srila Prabhupada, she thought she was all-pervading because she was following the impersonalist path. So when Prabhupada asked her, "Where do you stay?" she said, "Oh, very near." But actually, she was very far away, about 2 hours on the metro, or whatever you call it, the subway, underground. But because she thought she was all-pervading, she said, "I'm very near, you know." So, but when you try to practically apply the philosophy of being all-pervading, you find out it doesn't work. She wasn't actually all-pervading. She had to take 2 hours to come there at 7 o'clock in the morning, which is quite early for people in those days. So she means she had to leave at 5 o'clock. If she was all-pervading, she wouldn't have to worry about that. So it just, that philosophy doesn't work, that we are God and we're all-pervading. And so, but actually Krishna is Purusha, Adi Purusha. He's also the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Kunti, right here in this verse, we can see the difference also between Kunti and Yashoda. Yashoda would never think Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She would always pray to Narayan for the protection of Krishna. And if you tell Yashoda, you know, he's Ishvara, or you tell Nanda, you try to tell them, you know, he's God, he's Ishvara, they'll just laugh at you, and they'll say, "No, Krishna's a small boy. You think he's Ishvara? Well, he carries my shoes," Nanda says. "He can't even control his hunger. How do you say he's Ishvara? He demands his food, and if we don't feed him, then he gets angry. So how can you cannot say he's Ishvara?" But Kunti had a different mentality. She saw him as Ishvara. She saw him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that's how she's praying. She's seeing him like that, as Brahman, Paramatma. The Brijbasis never saw him like that. So people today are confused about the real nature of God. Some say he's all-pervading, so he can't be a person. When the Archbishop of the Church of England was asked, "What is your concept of God?" he said, "It's a burning bush." Because that's how he appeared in the Bible to some people. I mean, he's a lot more than that. He can appear as anything. What to speak of a burning bush? So if Krishna is all-pervading, how can he be a person or localized? That is the question that people are asking, and that's a bit bewildering here for Kunti. And if he's both all-pervading and localized, how can he be invisible? I mean, he's everywhere. So in India, the impersonalists, they cannot imagine how God can be a person. They say he's nameless and formless, and they pray to him, "Tameva Pita, Tameva Mata, you are my mother, you are my father." But who is that mother and who is that father? They cannot say. You ask, "Who's your mother and father?" "Oh, it's a light." But who has a light for a mother and father in this world? It's just not possible. You can't have a light for your mother and father, the one Brahman. It's not natural. And so when Prabhupada was talking to religious leaders in America, he was asking them, "So who is God?" And they could not answer. So Prabhupada said, "Okay, I know, it's Krishna. So you don't know, so I know it's Krishna. So why don't you accept Krishna as God?" So these are all Christians and ministers. But Prabhupada was speaking very straightforwardly. And so Kunti begins her prayers accepting Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And at the end of the purport, it leads to the next verse. Prabhupada says, "He reserves the right of not being exposed to persons who are not surrendered souls. This checking curtain is called the Maya energy of the Lord. It controls the limited vision of the rebellious soul." It is explained as follows. So before we go into that verse, I'd like somebody to go on the board again. Would you like to go and you can write? We'll have a little discussion about how to see Krishna. Because she is seeing Krishna outside and inside and then also as the Supreme Person. Oh, is there an eraser? Yeah. So I would just like to ask you, how can you see Krishna in your life? Just get some ideas now, so then when you go home today, you can have some ideas of what to do and how to see Krishna in your life. So who can tell me one way?
You can. Something that happens that
yeah, it can be. Yeah.
Krishna rather than
Yeah, you can be a sign of Krishna, or yeah, exactly. It's not that you see Krishna coming, you know, you see him face to face. I mean, if you see that, that's wonderful. Like, it will be on the internet, I think. if Krishna comes before you face to face, that's wonderful. But and it's good if you expect that. But most likely you have to go to the temple for that. No, there are other ways to see Krishna, and that's what we're trying to do now, is how can we see Krishna in our lives? Yes?
By serving Krishna's devotees.
Okay, by serving Krishna's devotees. That's kind of the process. Yes?
Seeing him as danger.
Danger. Okay, as danger. Danger. Yeah, he's dangerous. I mean, he can take everything away from you, Prabhupada said. Okay. Yes?
Meditating that everyone has a supersoul.
Okay, supersoul. Meditating on the supersoul in everyone's heart. You can see Krishna like that. Yes?
In all activities, you try to do something, it doesn't work, but at the time, think of Krishna.
Okay, in your activities. While you're doing your activities, Krishna says in Gita, yes, you should think of me and fight. That's one way. Yes? Great. See him how the universe functions. The sun is rising and setting at a certain time. Good. That's more like seeing him without. Yeah? Yeah, I'm the wind, I'm the light of the sun and the moon. The sun is my eye. So if you see the sun, I think here it's very strong. You're not supposed to kind of be in the sun or look at it. And in India, I can just look at the rising sun, but here I'm kind of afraid. I've heard things about the sun here. Yes.
Seeing the deity.
Seeing the deity is very good. And that's more like the Bhagavan aspect. That's the Bhagavan aspect. And the Brahman aspect is more in the world, seeing how the world relates. Or it's also like the universal form aspect of him. Yeah?
His name,
very good. You can see him by his name, yes?
By
reading Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, very good. So these are some ideas. Also, on the Brahman part, we have from the 11th canto, we have the 24 gurus. And they are all different, the elements of this world, the sun, the moon, the earth, and how you don't see them as objects for sense gratification, but rather as relationship to Krishna, or as your instructing gurus, that you can learn from the earth. You can learn from the trees. What do we learn from the trees?
Tolerance,
also from the earth. So you can see Krishna like that in the things around us. From the sky, how to be detached. From the wind, also detachment. The wind goes everywhere over bad odors, good odors, but it doesn't carry, it carries them and then it drops them. From the sun, we learn how to, the sun evaporates water and then it gives it back rain as rain. So the sadhu, he accepts things for Krishna's service, and then when the correct times, he gives those things away to people. He accepts and he gives, just like the sun. So this is one way to see him without, as super soul. You can also see how, if you're on book distribution especially, how he's working through the person you're talking to. Try, if you have a family, try to see Krishna in your family members today. That's a good way to see Krishna, because sometimes it's a challenge in the family to see Krishna always in your family members. If you have friends or if you have work, try to see Krishna at work. When you're at work, that might be hard to do also. So that is one of your homework today, is to... Okay, you can come back. Thank you. You can see Krishna in your life. Just go through today and choose one way. If you want to see him without, like in the elements, you can try and see him like that in the world. Or if you want to see him as super soul, or you want to see him as a supreme person. So today I would like you to just observe your life and try to see Krishna in the things that happen to you, like, for example, danger, if Krishna protects you, hopefully. Of course he will protect you. His protection comes in different ways. So, verse 19. Maya javika chanam agyad hoksijam avyayam nalakshase muradisha nato natyataro yata. Being beyond the range of limited sense perception, you are the eternally irreproachable factor covered by the curtain of deluding energy. You are invisible to the foolish observer, exactly as an actor dressed as a player is not recognized. So now, why is he invisible? And who cannot see him? This verse explains. Why is he invisible and who cannot see him? There's 3 points in this verse. The first point is our vision is covered, maya javanikachanam, it's covered by a curtain of maya, therefore we cannot see Krishna. And this goes for everyone in this world, pretty much. Even the devotees sometimes are covered by the curtain of maya. We cannot see Krishna in front of us all the time. Then the second thing is that Krishna is at hoksaja, he's beyond our vision. So this little picture, these pictures I've brought have been done when my stepdaughter was 10 years old. She did these pictures. And she's quite imaginative. So here we have Krishna. He's up above the curtain of maya. We're down there. Hopefully that's not us. That's the non-devotees down there. And the fools and the ignorant. And she had the ideas for those two pictures to show who is ignorant and who is a fool. And then we have the curtain of maya. Then we have the Krishna is way up there at hoksajam. He's transcendental. He's avyayam and he's at hoksajam, irreproachable. And the third thing is mudhadrisha, the vision of fools. So the mudhas, the fools. So God is invisible to those who do not want to see him, would rather see his opulences and enjoy his opulences. Videshu durlabam adurlabam atma bhakta. That even in the Vedas, they cannot find Krishna. Very difficult. We just studied this year the prayers of personified Vedas. They are searching for Krishna. They can't even see Krishna. And so how can they speak about Krishna in the Vedas? It's very difficult to find Krishna there. You'll find 96% ritualistic activities, things like that. Adulabham atma bhakta, but his devotee can easily see him. So first we have this curtain of maya. It is made of the misconception, I am the enjoyer and everything I see is mine to enjoy. That is the curtain. So if we can get beyond that false ego, then perhaps we can get beyond the curtain and see Krishna. But we're a captive prisoner of our false ego. We think we belong to this world, but actually we belong to Krishna's world. Then the second point is that hoksaja, he's beyond. And that, Srila Prabhupada analyzed that word. He divided it into two parts, adha, aksaja. Adha means to put down, and aksaja means vision. So Krishna, he puts down our vision, so we cannot see him. Defeats our vision, defeats the material vision, in other words. Just like the sun, people come and they say, show me God. So that's the same thing as in the darkness of night saying, show me the sun. Let the sun rise. I want to see. And so we're in the darkness. People are in darkness. They cannot see God. And they're demanding, show me God. There was one person who came to Prabhupada's class. He thought a lot about himself. He thought he was perhaps God. He had a wonderful cape on with suns and moons and stars on it. So he came to hear Srila Prabhupada. And he was very challenging. And he had this question. He said, he asked Prabhupada, can you see God? Prabhupada said, yes, but you're in the way. So, yes, he had a big false ego. If you move out of the way, I can see better. The false ego is what gets in the way between our seeing God, actually. So, therefore, our eyes, our eyes are defeated, our material eyesight, his election. Muta drisha, and we have the vision of fools, or muta. Muta means rascal. Prabhupada's favorite word in folio 3,400 times. You'll find this word. And in Bombay, he used to walk with his friend, Dr. Patel, and he would call him muta, fool, and Dr. Patel would complain, why are you calling me fool? I'm a doctor. I'm a scientist. Prabhupada said, I'm not saying it. Krishna is saying it. Bhagavad Gita. Namam duskritanam muta. If you don't surrender to me, you are a rascal. So this is ignorance, that we don't, the vision of the ass. Actually, the world is full of darkness. And it's not that there is no light. The light is there, but people don't want to see the light. So therefore, they remain in darkness. That's Kali Yuga. Kali Yuga, people don't want to see the light. So Bhagavatam has come to give the light, to give eyes to the people, the vision of spiritual life. Very difficult to understand Krishna. So three things, three obstacles are there. There's the curtain of Maya. There's Krishna, who's transcendental, and we're not. And then we have the vision of fools sometimes that simply work hard and enjoy. So if we don't see Krishna, we can come to the temple. And that's one way to see Krishna. So what prevents us from seeing Krishna? What is holding us back? So here's another thing. Maybe you can go back up and write again. What are our obstacles to seeing Krishna in our lives? And this is the second choice of homework. You can choose to try and see Krishna, or you can choose to see, if you can't see Krishna, well, what's stopping me? What's the obstacle now? What's the challenge that I cannot see Krishna in my life? So, yes?
Self-centeredness.
Self-centeredness, okay. That may stop us. I think you might need to take that off. Maybe. You think you have enough room? Yes?
Material desires.
Material desires, okay. Anything else? Yes?
Material activities.
Material activities. Yeah, that could be a problem. Yes?
False ego.
False ego, yes? Okay, Vaishnavaparad. Vaishnavaparad, offenses to devotees. And I found something that was an obstacle, just like in chanting the holy name, when you speak of offenses, the offense of inattention, which has three parts. I found that also applied to the rest of my day and my difficulty in seeing Krishna. So the three parts are indifference, distraction, and laziness. We might just be, don't care, you know, okay, so what if I don't see Krishna? it's time for material things. It's time for other things. Why should I be always seeing Krishna or thinking of Krishna? So indifference, distraction. We may want to see Krishna, but then we get distracted. The cell phone rings, or the child demands something, and we get distracted. And a third thing could be laziness. I'm tired. I just need to rest. Yes, it's been a hard day. It's too hard to think of Krishna, see Krishna. So what are some other obstacles? We have indifference, we have... And the obstacles, false ego, did you get the ones that everybody said?
Yeah.
Vaishnavaparad. Anything else, yes?
Wanting to be the controller.
Wanting to be the controller, that's kind of under false ego, yeah?
The senses.
The senses, yes. The senses get out of control, and then we forget about Krishna. So this is your second. You can choose, you can try to see Krishna in your life, and if that's very difficult, you can choose to think, oh, why can't I see Krishna? What is the obstacle to my seeing Krishna today in my life? So this is your two choices. These are your two choices. Now there's one prayer that is very helpful to remove obstacles or to help you to see Krishna, and that is from Chaitanya Charitamrita. Katanchana smite yasmin duskaram sukaram bhave smite viparitam sya shi chaitanya namamitam. Things that are difficult to do become easy to execute if one somehow or other remembers Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, you have Lord Chaitanya here. You can remember your beautiful deities here. If you have a problem today, always remember them. Even easy things, if one does not remember Lord Chaitanya, even easy things become very difficult. To this Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I offer my respectful obeisances. So, the next verse, verse 20, explains who Krishna reveals himself to. Tata paramahansanam muninam amalatmanam bhakti yoga vitanartam katam pashye mahistriya. You yourself descend to propagate the transcendental science of devotional service unto the hearts of the advanced transcendentalists and mental speculators who are purified by being able to discriminate between matter and spirit. How then can we women know you perfectly? Kunti's comparing herself and her qualifications to the great mystics and jnanis. She says, Krishna, you come for them. You are coming to enlighten the great yogis and the transcendentalists. But the fact is, not that. Krishna is coming for his devotees. He's not coming for the great yogis. He's not coming for the jnanis. He's not jnani vatsala. He's not yogi vatsala. He's bhakta vatsala. He's very dear to his devotees. He's coming for Kunti. But she's very humble. She's putting herself in a humble position. But actually Krishna, he was about to leave Hastinapur for Dwaraka. And what is the first thing he did before he left? He went to Kunti to take the dust of her feet because she was his aunt. In the Vedic custom, Vedic system, before you go on a journey, you go and take permission from all your elders, father, mother, guru, aunts, everybody who's your elder. So he was going to her to get the blessings. Krishna was going, Supreme Personality of Godhead, was going to his aunt and begging the blessings for his safe journey and permission to leave. Now, she didn't want to give permission. That was her whole purpose here in her prayers. He's coming for permission, but she doesn't want to give it. And in her prayers, she's showing that. So the great yogis, sannyasis, who she's talking about, they go to the forest to perform austerities to see Krishna. But they are not very successful. It takes millions of years by that process in order to see God. And even then, you may just get a glimpse of the effulgence of his toenails, these yogis. That's what they get. Or they may get a little super soul, but they don't get to see Krishna. But so when Krishna was here, these yogis would come to visit Kunti. Because Krishna was in her house, and they could go and see him, just like that. So she used to have all these great sages and people coming to visit just so they could see Krishna. So who was in a greater position, actually? It was Kunti. Because the house, her house, was like a holy dham. Because everything in her house was meant for the pleasure of Krishna. And that's what makes it a dham. Everything is for the pleasure of Krishna. And Krishna was their guru. He was their messenger. He was their driver, chariot driver. He was everything for them. But Kunti, out of her humbleness, her humility, was saying, no, we're just women, you don't come for us. She thought like that he didn't come for me. He came for these great sages, that's why he came here. So Prabhupada said in the purport that the Lord is so kind, he does not show special favor only to one who is a great philosopher. He knows the sincerity of purpose. And so, simplicity of acceptance of the Lord's authority is more effective than showy, insincere, religious fervor. So I'm sure you might have, I don't know if you have this in New Zealand, but in America we have examples. In India we have a lot of examples of insincere religious fervor. In the name of religion, they say, I am a great Christian, I am a great this, I'm even Hindus too, everybody in every religion that's there. But they don't follow. They don't follow the rules. So the humble devotee can defeat even the greatest yogi, just like Ambarish Maharaj. So this humility is very important. It opens the door to the higher levels. Chanadapi sunichena tarari vasahishna. Lord Chaitanya recommends. And in the sixth canto, 17th chapter, you're in the fourth chapter, Prabhupada says in the purport, unless one is meek and humble, one cannot qualify to sit at the lotus feet of the Lord. And Burijan, in one of his retreats, he said something very wonderful about humility. He compared bhakti to a tree that's growing. And he compared humility to the roots of the tree of bhakti. He said, when the roots of humility grow deeper, the tree of bhakti grows taller. So humility is very, very important. And this is the qualification to see Krishna, this humble bhakti, humble devotion. Sometimes people think that intelligence is the most important thing. We just read a purport in Vrindavan. They were talking about, it was the Daksha Yajna. And Daksha had to get the head of a goat. Now the brain of a goat is not the same as the brain of a demigod that Daksha had. But although he had the brain of a goat, he was speaking beautiful prayers to Lord Shiva. And Prabhupada said in the purport that this shows that the brain substance is not the source of the intelligence. The intelligence is coming from consciousness. It's not coming from the brain. So you know what that means? Spiritual intelligence does not depend upon the amount of brain you have. So therefore, we can have access to unlimited intelligence if we want. You know how to do that? You know how to access unlimited intelligence? Anybody have an idea? Chant japa. When you chant the holy name, then you're connecting with the super soul. The super soul is a reservoir, it's the source of all your intelligence. Jamal Krishna Maharaj one time had an operation. He was under anesthesia. And he saw in his state under the anesthesia, he saw Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada was reporting to the previous acharyas about his preaching work here. He said, these people have no spiritual qualifications. They cannot follow any rules. They only have one qualification. He says, they follow me. They have faith in me. They have Guru Nishtha. So that was our saving grace, that we followed Srila Prabhupada. So therefore, if we have this humility to follow Srila Prabhupada, don't go away, don't deviate, then we can go back to Godhead. Prabhupada said, if you just chant 16 rounds, follow the four principles, I guarantee that I will take you back to Godhead. And so this is a very wonderful promise by Srila Prabhupada. So we just need to develop quality of humility. We try to accept Srila Prabhupada and follow him, no matter what our position may be. So now verse 21. Krishnaya Vasudevaya Devaki Nandanaya cha Nandagopakumaraya Govindaya Namo Namaha. Let me therefore offer my respectful obeisances unto the Lord, who has become the son of Vasudev, pleasure of Devaki, boy of Nanda and the other cowherd men of Vrindavan, and the enlivener of the cows and senses. So Kunti is glorifying the holy names of Krishna. She has chosen some names here. So before I discuss these names, I would like to ask you, some of you can tell me, what is your favorite name of Krishna? Do you have a favorite name? Yeah. Govinda? Yeah, Gorsundar? Shamasundar? Okay. Do you have a reason why you like Shamasundar? Vrindavan, okay. Reminds you of Vrindavan. Govinda, you know? Okay, Govinda and Gauranga. That's a good pair. Okay. All right. Anybody else have a favorite name? Yeah? Lalita Madhava. Yeah? Why is that? You don't know.
Because it sounds cool, but also because I kind of remind me of Krishna's kind of cocky nature.
Okay. Lalita Madhava. Anybody else have a favorite name, yeah? Shyam, Krishna. Yeah, Krishna includes everything, so that's that's understandable. Shyam. Yes, I also have Govinda because the first deities I worship were Radha Govinda in Calcutta. So I'm attached to that name. And then we'll find out another reason when we discuss Govindas in this list here of Kunti as well. And I discovered another reason why I like Govinda. Okay, so I'll go into the discussion. So in the beginning, she said, I offer my obeisances to the original person. But she didn't say who it was. Now she's telling us, who is that Adi Purusham? Who is that original person who's everywhere, within, without? It's Krishna. It's Krishna. So we can understand by the grace of Kunti, who is this invisible person that's everywhere that we can't see? It's Krishna. Krishnaya Vasudevaya. Vasudeva means he's also all-pervading. It also means he's also the son of Vasudev. And although he's all-pervading, he's become the son of Devaki, Devaki Nanda. He's in her womb. And Srila Prabhupada explained in his lecture that some people may say, well, there's so many Krishnas. You know, how do we know which Krishna she's talking about? She says, okay, it's the Krishna that's the son of Vasudev. They say, well, there may be so many Krishnas, son of Vasudev. Just like when I was in Vrindavan, I was Narayani, mother of Govinda, and there were three Narayanis who had sons Govinda at the same time when I came to Vrindavan. Three Narayanis and three Govindas, and two of them were the same age. It's like quite amazing. One from Philippines, one from Spain, and I was from America. And we all had Govindas as our sons. It could happen, you know. But they said, it's the one who's Devaki, the son of Devaki and Vasudev. Oh, there might be so many Devakis and Vasudev. No, Nanda Gopa Kumaraya, the son, the coward boy, the foster son of Maharaj Nanda. So three times she's showing that it's Krishna and Govinda. Govinda means the Lord of the senses. So Prabhupada in his purport says, we're looking for sense gratification, and if we associate with Krishna, we'll enjoy our senses abundantly because he's Govinda. So yes, it's better you associate with Krishna, and then you can actually make your senses happy, permanently. Permanently happy. No scarcity of sense gratification, Prabhupada says, dancing with Krishna, but it's not gross sense gratification. It's spiritual sense gratification in the spiritual world. So we have to associate with Govinda. So somehow or other, Prabhupada said, if you just understand that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda Madhi Purusham, then your life is successful. He said that in his lecture. And Radhanath Swami also, when he came to India, he also had contact with one of our preachers who was 3 years old, Saraswati, and that's all she knew. She would just go up to everyone and she would say, guess what? And then he would say, what? And she would say, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that was her preaching. And that was enough. And Radhanath Swami was impressed by that preaching of Saraswati. And so the purpose of creation is compassion. He's coming here just to wake us up to come back to him. Now, Vishnu Chakravarti has some nice comments on these names also. He explains that there is a series. It's like a sequence of names. Krishna is the first, source of all avatars. Then it gets a little bit more personal. He's Vasudeva. He's the son of Vasudev, Kunti's brother. Then it gets a little bit more personal, more high relationship. Devaki Nandan, he was in Devaki's womb. And then even more personal, he's Nanda Gopa Kumaraya. That's the Leela of, they had the childhood Leela, Kumara Leela. And finally, Govinda. And the name of Govinda, he explains, was given after Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, when he got the Abhishek and he was bathed and he was given the name Govinda. And that is the beginning of his Kaishar age. So that is when he got the name Govinda. It is for a different, it is for Madhurya Leela. And that is the explanation of Krishna Chakravarti Thakur. So we'll go to the last verse for today, verse 22. Nama pankachanabhaya, nama pankachamaline, nama pankachanetraya, namaste pankachangaye. My respectful obeisances are unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, whose glance is as cool as a lotus, and whose feet are engraved with lotuses. So here is a very nice prayer. She's offering obeisances, nama, four times, nama, 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 nama. Now, what is this obeisances? Again, in one of our Govardhan retreats, Satchinandan Swami explained the meaning of obeisances. In obeisances, the mind goes down and the heart goes up. So when we offer obeisances, our false ego goes down and our heart, our emotions for Krishna, they go up. So in bhakti, the heart is up and the mind is down. In material life, the mind is up, the heart is down. Obeisances means that your devotional feelings rule over your mind. So when you offer obeisances, you should do it with body, not only with body. You should do it with words. Of course, we do say some prayers when we offer obeisances, but also with mind. The mind should also go down. Sometimes the mind doesn't go down. It stays up and the body and the words go down. So we should try practicing, when you practice obeisances, to bring the mind also down. The mind should be very humble, submissive, at the lotus feet of Krishna. So now Kunti is offering her obeisances. Now this is kind of a bit abnormal because she's a superior to Krishna. So she should not be offering her obeisances. Let me read the translation. Again, my respectful obeisances are unto you, O Lord, whose abdomen is marked with a depression like a lotus flower, who are always decorated with garlands of lotus flowers, whose glance is as cool as the lotus, and whose feet are engraved with lotuses. So this is meditation on the form of Krishna. Because she is his superior, she's starting with the navel. She didn't start with his feet because she felt Krishna might be a bit embarrassed if she did that. I mean, as it is, she's offering obeisances. But she tried to make it a little less embarrassing by starting from his navel because she's his aunt. Now, we should start from the feet when we offer obeisances. And in the purport, Prabhupada says, one should begin to see the Lord from his lotus feet, gradually rising to the thighs, waist, chest, and face. One should not try to look at the face of the Lord without being accustomed to seeing the lotus feet of the Lord. So what can we say about the Lord's lotus feet? What do you know about Krishna's lotus feet? Anybody know something? Yes? Pinkish toenails. Very good. Yes. Beautiful. Okay. Huh? Marks on the bottom. Good. Yeah. Many beautiful marks. Anything else? Yeah.
Transcendental.
Transcendental.
So beyond the, like a lotus.
Okay, beyond the material world. Okay, they're transcendental. What else? Tulsi leaves are on his feet. Yeah?
They glow.
Hmm?
They glow.
They glow. Yes. Srila Prabhupada said that if you take the marks of Krishna's lotus feet in your heart, it'll destroy the darkness of your heart. It'll kick out all the dirty things. Just the glow of the marks on his lotus feet. Very good. So then, and also in the third canto, it's described a meditation of the yogis, that the feet act like thunderbolts hurled to shatter the mountain of sin stored in the mind of the meditating devotee. So therefore, one should meditate on the lotus feet of the Lord for a long time. And his feet are compared to a boat, his lotus feet. This boat can carry us across the ocean of material nations, the ocean of birth and death. So then his navel, nama pankachanabhaya. What do you know about his lotus navel? Yeah?
It was the birthplace of Lord Brahma.
birthplace of Lord Brahma. A lotus came up from his navel. That's another reason why it's called the lotus navel. Yes, very good. Okay, and, huh? It's deep, that's right. That's a characteristic of of course, it's a characteristic of God. And also in a very advanced person. Yeah, you had something? No. Okay. So then his garland, lotus garland. Anybody know anything about his lotus garland?
Goes down to his ankles.
Goes down to his ankles, very good. Huh? Very fragrant. Yes? Vajayanti, okay. Yeah? Bumblebees come and sit, and not only do they sit, they have kirtan. According to third canto, the bumblebees on the garlands are having kirtan while they're on the garland. We didn't know that in Calcutta, but actually, yeah.
They never
die? Huh?
They never die,
yeah. Now, Prabhupada said a very interesting thing about his lotus garland in his lectures. He said, just like he has a lotus navel and one lotus is coming out from his navel, so the garland, so that's one universe. One lotus is one universe. So he has a garland, it's all the universes. His garland is the garland of all the universes. All the lotuses coming from all the universes, that's his garland. So, wonderful lotus garland. Yes. Okay, and his eyes. What do you know about his eyes? Lotus. Lotus, okay. Lotus eyes. They're reddish like the rising sun. Merciful glance. Very good. Okay. So Prabhupada said we can catch Krishna just by hearing and chanting the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam. And this way we can catch Krishna. We can make him in our lives. So Bhagavatam is the window to the spiritual world. It makes Krishna visible to us. This is how to see Krishna. When the pure devotee speaks, when Shukadeva Goswami, Srila Prabhupada, then Krishna is revealed, the Dhamma is revealed. So Prabhupada says, simply you chant these verses of Bhagavatam and we'll find Krishna. You think just of one verse, Krishna's body, you can meditate your whole life how Krishna is beautiful. He said, just this one verse is enough for you to meditate on for your whole life. Okay, so I'd just like to review the homework. You can try to see Krishna in your life, see how, and we will discuss tomorrow before class what you have seen, how you have seen Krishna in your life. Or you can choose to say, what is the obstacle to your seeing Krishna? Why can't you see? Or maybe in some area of your life, it may be a challenge to see Krishna in that area of your life. There may be some challenges to see Krishna there manifesting. Okay, so are there any questions or comments on these five verses? Yes.
One thing I was just thinking is it true, is it most important that, like, all these activities will give us a result if we follow them, but because we're continually not following them, you know, it's like we're not doing uninterrupted devotional service,
right.
And we don't get that result, and
well,
then we lose faith in following.
So what is the question?
So how important is it for us to meditate on eventually achieving a state where we're performing uninterrupted devotional service?
Okay. How important is it for us to meditate on a state in which we will eventually achieve uninterrupted devotional service?
I don't hear it much. You know, that's actually...
Well, it's the goal.
Yeah.
So it's important to meditate on the goal. But at the same time, if you're not at the goal, I mean, you're not expected to be at it, and it's going to take a while. So you should not give up hope and feel like hopeless and defeated. But in whatever position you're in, you should try to improve. Take one step towards the goal. It's a gradual process. So it starts with shraddha, faith, association, and then initiation and following the rules. And so it's a step-by-step process. And whatever level you're on, You can go to the, take one step more. That should be, you can take short-term goals and say, okay, maybe now I'm chanting 2 rounds a day. Perhaps I can start chanting 3 rounds a day or 4 rounds a day like this. And you make short-term goals, and then your long-term goal will be achieved. But you should never lose sight of the long-term goal at the same time that my goal is to have uninterrupted devotional service. So if you're chanting 16 rounds, then you're already chanting 16 rounds following the four regative principles, then you can meditate on that goal. You can also meditate on chanting without offenses, the clearing stage of chanting, and then finally the pure stage. That comes by mercy when Krishna sees our endeavors at trying to please him, trying to follow. When Krishna is pleased, then he will reveal himself and give us the pure holy name. But in the meantime, we should not give up hope, but we should keep trying to advance. Just think of what is the one thing that I can do that will help me to come closer to my goal. Just think, what activity can I do right now in my life that will help me to come closer to that goal? And you don't take huge steps. We can't do that. We just take maybe small steps every day. And so, but it is important to think of the goal. It is important. Without hopelessness or defeat. Any other questions? Yes. Yeah, that's tomorrow's class. You want to have it today already? Yes, she did. And she will, yes. Yes, that's okay.
Do you mind my
ask? Yeah, it's all right.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So, not being on that level, I tend to ask Krishna, why are you doing this? Can you submissively inquire, please show me, please give me the intelligence for me to understand why, so that you're not, instead of being frustrated, you surrender? Is that a bona fide?
Yeah, it's quite, you should pray at your level. Don't ask for calamities. I know I know some examples of devotees who have asked for calamities and they're getting them and then they're trying to take the prayer back. So it doesn't work. It doesn't work. I know, she's still going through calamities. She keeps breaking every bone in her body, practically, you know. There's one devotee I know and it's just, no, don't do that. We don't recommend that you pray for calamities because they're going to come anyway. You know, you don't need to pray for them. What's the need to pray for calamities? We're in Kali Yuga, you know. It's the age of calamities and terrorism. Oh, so many things. There's no need. You just need to pray at your level. Yes, generally our first reaction is, why is this happening to me? But it's a good question because that means you want to know the reason behind it. And that means, if there's a reason behind it happening, there must be a lesson to be learned. So probably a better question would be, what lesson am I to learn from this? Why is this happening means, what lesson am I to learn? Until you learn your lesson, it'll keep happening. It's the test. It's the test of Krishna. When you pass the test, then you'll go to another level or another test. You don't have to keep doing the same test until you pass it. Once you pass it, then it's not a problem anymore. And you won't see it as, if it happens, you won't see it again as a problem or a calamity. Once you pass it, once you learn the lesson that you're supposed to learn, then it stops being a calamity or a problem. And we must see it as the energy of Krishna also. All these impediments, all these things, they are Krishna's energy. So his energy can be changed. That is our whole process of Krishna consciousness. We're trying to change the material energy into spiritual energy by using it for the pleasure of Krishna. So even the difficulties and these things can be used as stepping stones to bring us closer to Krishna. And that is what lesson Kunti is teaching us, that how to use a suffering or distressful condition as a stepping stone to bring us closer to Krishna. Yes, somebody else had a question here? Yes. What should be the ultimate desire of a devotee? You can study Shikshastakam. It's a progression of desires there. And starting with glorification of the holy name, just appreciation, and then also the second verse is glorification, how you've made it so easy, but I have no attraction. Then humility, humility will open up the gate, the doorway to the higher levels. Then I don't want anything of this world, that's the next step, ruchi. Nishta is humility, ruchi is not to have any attraction for this, and then, but simply give me service. The ultimate desire is to desire service, birth after birth. That is Lord Chaitanya's teaching. And then next, also, we can do right in the beginning. Please pick me up. Prabhupada instructed us to chant the holy name like a child crying for its mother. Although I've fallen into this ocean, please pick me up from this ocean and place me as an atom at your lotus feet. So these are very wonderful desires that are taught to us by Lord Chaitanya. It gets higher, separation from Krishna. Yes, the last one is you can trample me or embrace me. It's a bit like Kunti's prayer. And you can make me brokenhearted by not being coming in front of me, but you'll remain my worshipful Lord unconditionally. And so these are the desires of the devotees. That's one Sikshastika. Another prayer is from Lord Brahma in the 10th canto, 14th chapter, Tatenu Kampam Susamikshamano. That hope against hope for the mercy of the Lord, Bunjana Ivatma Kritam Vipakam, tolerate the reactions of my past misdeeds. Then Vidvagva Purbir Vidadan Namaste, offering obeisances with body, mind, and words. Then Jiveta Yomuktipade Sadayabhak. Then he is eligible for liberation. So that's another way of desiring too, at our level that we're at, the essence of Krishna consciousness. That's 10.14.8. So that's the essential prayer of a devotee. Any other questions? Yes?
Kunti is obviously very realized, advanced.
Yes.
Fully. Why does she identify as a woman in that verse?
Okay, although she's such an advanced devotee, why does she identify as a woman? Because the devotees always take the most humble position. They prefer not to be seen as advanced or anything. And that's how she felt. She actually felt, I am a woman, I cannot understand these things. She felt like, it's not like she was, I mean, she's advanced in the sense that she understands everything about Krishna, but at the same time, her mood, her bhava is that, no, I am, this is my relationship. I'm just this. I'm nothing of this world. And that's how the devotees feel, that I don't have any qualification to understand Krishna. And she was bewildered also. And she thought, well, the bewilderment is, this is why I'm bewildered, because I'm just a woman. So I don't understand. And she was bewildered. These sages, they can understand, but I can't. So that's how she felt. And she was giving respect. When the sages would come, she would be respecting them, offering obeisances. She was in that position that, you know, if the sages, sannyasis came, then she would be the first to serve them, offer obeisances, thinking they're much superior to me. That's how the devotees, they don't think themselves as transcendental and beyond. Even they were following Varnashram in those days quite strictly. And she never felt herself like beyond the Varnashram system. She felt like, I am this, I'm the wife, I'm a mother, I'm a woman. And so how can I understand? But Krishna is so merciful, although she was feeling unqualified, he was coming right in front of her, face to face. And so that showed her advancement, that how Krishna was responding to her, was showing how advanced she was. But also Lord Chaitanya says that we understand the standard for measuring love of God is humility. That is the standard. How humble you are is how much you love Krishna. So Lord Chaitanya said, I have no love for Krishna. Otherwise I would have died. And so that's humility. But someone who says, I just saw Krishna the other day and in my dream. Or, you know, yes, he's coming and doing these things. And then they don't love. One who says, oh, I wish somehow I could see Krishna and develop some love for him, then you know, and that person is more advanced. It was strange. There was one Bhagavatam class, and some devotee in the audience was not understanding. I think it was Burjan giving class, yeah. And he was saying how, you know, I've been chanting 40 years, and still I don't see Krishna, I don't have any love. And then somebody was criticizing. They said, you know, how can he be chanting 40 years and not have any love? You know, what kind of devotee is he? You know, some new devotee, some new person. And I said, you don't understand. So this is, yeah, so it can be misunderstood that she's saying, oh, I'm a woman. No. It's, yeah, but these things don't matter. It doesn't matter. Yeah, so what, she's a woman. Krishna's right there in front of her, and he's her guru, he's her protector, he's everything for her. So who is advanced, she or the great sages? Who she's comparing herself to. She's saying they're much in a better position. They're understanding you. You're coming for them. But the truth is, he's coming for her and her family. And so an observer who is observing her will understand, no, it's not the way it is. Yes?
When you first come to this morning, you hear things like you want to work so hard and try to be so spiritual that you want to get out of the material world, go back to Godhead.
Mm-hmm.
But then as time progresses, they hear afterwards the devotee doesn't desire that way. And to get to the position of going back to Godhead, you have to chant. But doesn't the mercy of the Lord come as to surrender?
Yeah, the mercy comes if you through the guru. The guru is the mercy incarnation, and through him mercy comes. Krishna does not give directly; he gives through his devotees. The mercy comes through the devotees. So, if you have a guru and he gives you instructions, that's the mercy. If you follow the instructions, then you get the mercy. So, if he tells you to chant, that's the mercy, and if you chant, you get the mercy. Well, it's a good start. It's a good first desire. That's where we usually start. I had that for so many years. That was my motivation, just to get out. And then I met Jananivas and Pankajungri, and Jananivas convinced me, no, you should just please Krishna. Although Pankajungri was on my side. But, So you do, it's a gradual process. And you realize that actually getting out doesn't mean what you think it means. It doesn't mean to escape all the difficulties in that. It means to become so Krishna conscious that nothing affects you, nothing disturbs, like the ocean. That is one example of the ocean. It's no matter what happens, it remains very steady and grave. And also that sometimes so many rivers come into the ocean in the monsoon, but it's not disturbed. And then in the sun, in the summertime, so much water goes out, it still remains the same. So sometimes we get so many good things coming, so many up, and sometimes everything's taken away. But if you are able to remain fixed in Krishna consciousness, even during those times, that is actually liberation. Not so much. That is getting out, actually. Getting out means connecting with Krishna.
Actually, I just wanted to share something. I have this horrible, disturbing thought of taking birth and going into somebody else's womb again. So
it's disturbing, yeah. Could be.
So I mentioned it to Vedic Maharaj, and he said, Prabhupada said that it's like when you're in the plane, flying in the plane, and everything looks really tiny. And he said, when you get to a stage,
yeah, yeah. If you're meditating on Krishna in the womb, if you're hearing your mother chanting Srimad Bhagavatam while you're in the womb, then it makes a big difference. If your mother's chanting Hare Krishna and reading to you Srimad Bhagavatam and things, then that will make you forget all your distresses. Get a taste this life, and that'll help. if you have to go into another womb. Yes.
That made me think about Prabhupada's children.
Yes, yes. Yes, what about them?
Externally, it appears that one of them is really serious about Krishna consciousness.
Oh, one of them. Vrindavan. Mm. Yeah, I know Vrindavan. He's not so serious, but his daughter was serious. She married a devotee. But then she drowned in the flood in Mayapur. His one daughter was serious. And Prabhupada's brother's two grandchildren, they got initiation from Prabhupada while he was here. Because I was in Calcutta, I knew the family. So the two, she was coming and cooking. She was like 12 years old. Jalatala, now her name is Jalatala. She got initiated by Prabhupada. Two of his family members got initiated. They are not his direct family, but his brother's grandchildren. A boy and a girl, they got initiated. Brother and sister. And so, you have what is your question?
The question is that from this mind of disabled, they're Prabhupada's children, they must be pure devotees.
Well, it would be nice if they were. They weren't behaving, some of them weren't behaving like pure devotees. So the example is just like even you may have the perfect father, the children may not turn out. So the example is given of Bhaumasura. His father was Vishnu, but he came out a demon. And then Krishna had to kill him, his own son, and by another expansion, not Krishna's direct son, but so the point was bad association. The point was there was bad association, and that's how even the Lord's sons go bad, and how devotees' kids go bad, Prabhupada's kids also. Yeah, one was, Vrindavan was good, and the other one was the opposite. Yeah.
So when given Prabhupada is a pure devotee,
yeah, right. So that's there. So even if the child was not a pure devotee, they'll be delivered. They'll be delivered by Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said that if you're a pure devotee, so many generations, 21. If you're a Madhyama Adhikari, 14 generations before and after will be delivered. If you're a Kanishta, just a young new neophyte devotee, you'll have 3 generations before and after will be delivered. So there's hope for our children, even if we're just Kanishtas. Just keep being a devotee, somehow or other. That's right. Yeah, if the children can deliver you too, if they become a pure devotee. Let's hope. I only have one chance because I only have one son. But then his children, they may become pure devotees. Yeah.
Sometimes you see situations when people and devotees are coming.
Okay, this is the last question, and then we're going to stop.
Devotees are coming to the temple, and in between, they're probably some different activities, not entirely conscious. And then at the time of the death, they can chant Hare Krishna.
Well, it's better if they keep chanting, even though it's, they can't follow properly. At least they're doing something for Krishna. But not that you think, I'm going to do some materialistic activity, and then I'm going to go chant, and that'll counteract it. Now, that's an offense. But if they're just weak and they can't follow, that's another thing. Then it's not offensive. You just can't follow. You're not on that higher level. Just come and chant anyway. Everyone should chant. Hare Krishna.
No, I mean when they chant at the time of the death.
The time of death.
Yeah.
Oh, at the time of death, yes, everything will be considered. I mean, it's not that easy to chant at the time of death. I've seen many people dying. And it's not everyone who can do that. Now, one one Grahila, he just died. He was conscious up until the end of his life. He was chanting. In Mayapur, he just left. He was chanting. And all the devotees were chanting for him. He did it. But not everyone has that opportunity. And how do you get that? That is by practicing in this life. The more you practice, then you'll pass the final exam. Myself, I had the experience. I won't go into it now. I'll just say I had a near-death experience. And at that point, my memory was taken away. Although I was conscious, I had no memory, I had no concept of ego. It was just like everything was taken away. Even chant, I didn't know anything at the near death. But then the holy name came in front of me, and I, as soon as I saw it, I didn't know what it was, but out of habit I started chanting. When I started chanting, then my memory came back. I understood, oh, I'm a devotee of Krishna and this so and so. But so if you practice, even if you forget at the time of death, Krishna won't forget you. That was what I learned. So even at the time of death, if you practice your whole life, then Krishna will remember you in case you can't. But if you're just like half-half, then you got a 50-50 chance remembering Krishna at the time of death. 50-50. Now, if you have a guru, that will help a lot, because he can put in a few good words for you at the time of death. You know, Krishna will say, oh no, this one's not ready. Your guru can say, yeah, but you know, okay, you know, I'm asking you. So that's there also. So it's good to have a guru. Okay, I'll go to Srila Prabhupada. See you tomorrow, 7 o'clock. Verses 23 to 27 tomorrow. It's not working.
It's not working.
Yeah, I only need yours from yesterday and today.
Yeah, not a problem. Yeah, okay. I can give you like a CD or something.
Yeah,
with
CD.
The whole, you've got your laptop here?
Yeah.
I can put it on like a thumb drive and we can.
Yeah. I'll charge it.